Worldview on WBEZ. I'm Alexandra Solomon, in for Jerome McDonnell. The European Union has 24 official languages. In 2005, it set a goal to increase multilingualism. It wants all its citizens to speak their mother tongue plus at least two additional languages. Some countries have done better than others. Language remains an important but very contentious issue. Susanna Fagel is a professor of French at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's also affiliated with the university's European Union Center, and she's joining me now to talk about the role of languages in the EU and beyond. Welcome to Worldview, Susanna.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
And I should mention that Susanna speaks five languages, so she has a bit of an understanding of what we're talking about. So I want to ask you, they set out this policy that, you know, everybody should speak their mother tongue plus another two. Which countries, you know, the EU is a big place, who's been doing a good job? Who's kind of close to achieving this goal?
Well, this is a large union with 28 member states and 24 languages. So as you can imagine, the diversity is great also in terms of implementation of this policy. But you are right. The goals have been defined in 2002 in Barcelona. It is a general goal set by the European Commission, and it is implemented in various ways by the member states. All right, so that is a very important point. When we talk about the best students and the least, the ones that are lagging behind, we are talking about many different scenarios that
sure.
we get
sure.
Already with respect to the regions where these policies are applied. And this is how it should be by the principle of subsidiarity. The European Commission and any of the other players in the European Union that set out policies do not dictate anything to the member states, right? So the application will depend on what is already on the ground, of course, so that's one. The second is what kind of investments the different member states will make, right? So M plus two, mother tongue plus two, is a policy, a directive towards the enhancement of individual multilingualism, because we have geographical
sure.
diversity in Europe that is uncontestable. What the EU realized very early is that they have to enhance individual multilingualism in order to meet their objective of greater integration and social cohesion within the Union.
Right, because so, language is important for communication, for economics, for everything. It kind of impacts every part of
absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. And we are, in 2002, we are on a time when the euro becomes one of the common currency. And then the enlargement towards the east is in view already, 2004, which it will be. So it is in the EU's interest at this time to enhance or push towards greater multilingualism. So let's see how this is implemented in the ground. And one thing that the EU started doing is polling their citizens just to see how this is implemented, right? So let's go to the Scandinavian countries where regionally you have virtually mutually intelligible languages between Swedish and Danish, for instance. So add English to the mix, that is the most often learned foreign language, and you get mother tongue plus two. Go to some of the other best students or best candidates that are doing the best. Go to the Iberian Peninsula, Barcelona, where the accords actually have been instituted or carried out, and you get mother tongue Catalan, you get Castilian Spanish that the citizens have to learn, is their duty, constitutional duty. Add any of the major foreign languages in Europe, mostly German, English, and French, and you get mother tongue plus three. Same in Luxembourg, right? English as the global lingua franca, language of communication, and German and French as co-official. You get mother tongue plus two. So in some settings, it's much easier to implement than in others, such as in language islands, Hungary, just speaking to my mother tongue, that is virtual language island, right? Very difficult situations in terms of intercomprehension between bordering languages. The situation there will be a matter of investment by the state.
So you talk about investment playing a role in the Scandinavian countries. Then, how much is it the way that they teach languages? Is there a way that they teach language, foreign language, that's different with compared to say what goes on in Hungary?
In many of these successful applicants of the M+2 policy, you get innovative immersion programs and innovative pedagogical methods. So one of the innovative language programs were language immersion, where you have what is called content and language integrated learning. That means that some of the subject matters are learned in the other language. It could be either a national language or one of the foreign languages. Now, Catalonia, for instance, is a leader in early immersion programs, even preschool. At the preschool and kindergarten levels. And in defense of Hungary, just to go back a little bit earlier, what I have not mentioned is history also plays a role here. Hungary realized very early in the 60s that it is a language island and it needs to enhance individual multilingualism. I'm one of those who benefited from language learning in a historically German-speaking community. I was part of those immersion programs, and this was not any kind of a European incentive. It was an investment of the government at the time to enhance a reconciliation also in terms of previous ethnic conflicts, but I have greatly benefited from having that exposure to German.
So that's the reason that you speak such amazing English, even though it's not your first language.
I do not know that, but I do know that linguists say and experts say that early exposure to foreign languages enhances cognitive plasticity and disarms frustration towards languages that you might not understand. The way in which younger children seem to react is more in terms of curiosity. And they're willing to find ways in which they can integrate this new language, find ways in which they can communicate in, rather than later in adulthood, when this cognitive plasticity is no longer there.
And in your own particular case, so you speak five languages, so you went to a kindergarten where you weren't just learning Hungarian, you were learning German?
Yes.
And when did the other three come in then?
Well, the others came in school. I grew up behind the Iron Curtain, so to speak. So Russian was mandatory in elementary school. And some made it a point not to learn it. I did learn it, or at least I tried. And then later on, I developed it. I have an MA in Russian. Later I decided to focus on this. In high school, I was exposed to French, and I really liked it. And then I decided to make it my profession. So in my case, I did benefit from all that exposure, but it is also a professional choice. M+2 does not demand that from citizens of the member states. It only demands, that also depends on the nation states. It demands good enough, sort of low intermediate level command of two additional languages. They don't necessarily have to be foreign languages. They could be one of the other national languages that are either co-official or not with the state language, plus the mother tongue. So the expectations are not, interpreter, translation.
Sure. It's just a bit of to be able to communicate and understand one another,
right,
basically. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Worldview on WBEZ. I'm talking with Susanna Fagel. She's a professor of French at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's also affiliated with the university's European Union Center and is working on a book, Languages and Minorities in Europe. And we're talking about multilingualism in the EU. You mentioned that in your own case, you were behind the Iron Curtain, so you were forced to learn. Russian was required.
Mandatory.
Mandatory. Mm-hmm. And the issue of the Russian language is a contentious one. We've seen that in the recent conflict between Ukraine and Russia, where language laws have come into play. Ukraine passed a law, then they repealed it in terms of the Russian language. And this has also kind of plagued some of the former Baltic states as well, places like Latvia, where under the Soviet Union, Russian was required and it was part of a kind of Russification process.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit about how, now that, you know, those countries have joined the EU, the role that language is playing today there and kind of how it melds into its new identity?
That is another contentious place, absolutely, in the eastern borders of the Union. And it is also a difficult situation after many periods of Russification and de-Russification starting from the 19th century. So there is a lot of historical, ethnic, and ethnolinguistic tension built up. At the time, the three Baltic states become members of the European Union. And what happens there is a Baltic specialty. These languages take a very strong hard line to protect their own state. They call it titular languages. So Estonian, which is a Finno-Greek language, it's not mutually intelligible with Russian. A Latvian, which is a Balto-Slavic language, it shares quite a lot of vocabulary, but also not mutually intelligible with Russian. The two different language families of the big Indo-European language families. So what do? You are a state, newly acquired state independence, so you command all the language laws, and what happens is a hardliner approach. Language proficiency is tied to citizenship. You either speak within X amount of time, 5 or 8 years, I do not remember exactly what the situation was in different states. But in Latvia, you arrive at a situation 2005-2006 where strong language laws result in stripping part of the population virtually overnight from their citizenship. So you are a national, Russian national, but without citizenship in Latvia. So what happens is that different intergovernmental organizations step in, OSCE, Organization for Security and Cooperation of Europe, the European Union, the Council of Europe, that's another big player, and they arrive at mitigating these strong language laws at that time. The situation is very different. The former Soviet Union's, the Russian Federation's attitude, government, is quite different at that time. So the requirements are lowered, conflicts are mitigated, and what happens is in the good traditions of the EU, with guidelines also from the Council of Europe, these states put in place good immersion programs. Estonia is one of the leaders. M+2 additional languages are required at the elementary level in Lithuania and Latvia. So this inter-ethnic reconciliation is in place now through language instruction. So this is where you see these multilingualism policies can really enhance and help us with security in the region as well.
And cohesion,
absolutely.
Clearly.
Social cohesion, absolutely.
In terms of, well, that sort of raises another, the other kind of contentious issue then is the role of English, because it's become so widespread. There's a big division then. Do you support it or do you make policies that kind of temper it down? Can you talk a little bit about where things stand on the role of English in the EU?
Well, support it or not support it is a fact. English is de facto the global lingua franca. That means preferred language of communication between two individuals for whom English is not mother tongue. So it is an effect of globalization. That language is used as a lingua franca globally. Spanish is close as well, and it had made advances also in the European arena of language use, disfavoring French, for instance. That is, so there's quite a lot of competition, and English is there, and English will be there. Now, the question is, whether English should be overly privileged or not. Privileged over German and French, for instance. They are larger in terms of native speakers in Europe, about 82 million Germans just in Germany, and plus the neighboring states. And the French are about 63 million. The English are fewer, but their language is spoken more wide, or is more widespread as a foreign language learned worldwide. So the balance of power will determine between these major players what role English is going to get in different institutions. The citizens are already voting with their feet, so to speak, or with their money. Acquisition of English is absolutely a leading figure in the 2002 Eurobarometer census, for instance, that polls Europeans' language use. So it is there. I do not believe it will ever become a sole working language of the European Union because of traditions, because of Germany and France being the founding members. And they will not, again, balance of power, let their state and citizens being disenfranchised in EU institutions. But English is most certainly a very important global player and a language of choice. Oh, yes.
Well, that's probably, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for people here in America. We already, you know, comparatively, we're pretty far
very
behind,
spoiled.
Right, when it comes to, so now we'll be, it may hinder us even more. Susanna Fagel is a professor of French at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's affiliated with the university's European Union Center and is working on a book, Languages and Minorities in Europe. Thank you so much for joining us and talking about multilingualism.
Thank you very much for having me.